Hey, welcome in. Latest episode of that SEC podcast. We're back with another edition of the Roush Hour. Woo-hoo. Our guy, Nick Roush, Kentucky Sports Radio. How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing great. Doing better than you, apparently. I'm doing all right. Somebody was complimenting my hats last week in the chat, so I decided, you know what, I got to start busting out these bad boys. That's only like a fraction of them that are usually behind this head. There's like a whole wall over here. When you're a bald man, you got to be a man of many hats. So we're busting out one this week.
Oh, I'm so sorry to interrupt you. I don't like doing this, but we just had breaking news. I wanted to relay to the audience. This is massive. You're going to want to hear this as well. According to reports, Tennessee just scored again on Kentucky.
Come on. See, I knew you were up to it. I knew what you were going to do. And I was like, well, what if they're it? Because we actually had – there's all – this year, a lot of breaking news. It's happening all the time. And I just – you son of a bitch.
I thought Kentucky fielded a defense. What happened to Mark Stoops and Brad White fielding a defense?
Well, that's why I'm wearing this black hat, and they had to wear those black uniforms because you knew what was coming. Well, and this was weird. It's like, all right, hey, you finally get a quarterback. You can throw it around. You can score some points. Well, you're going to give up 52, so, you know, it doesn't really matter. And even if they didn't spot them two touchdowns, I'm not great at math there, Cuzzo, but 56 minus 14 is still greater than 34.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, what does it feel like to finally have a quarterback that can sling it all over the yard and you still lose by 22 points at home?
I mean, it's the first time they've had a quarterback throw for five touchdowns since Andre Woodson in 2007. They hadn't had two receivers with two touchdowns in a game since against an SEC team since 2011. I mean, they have an offense. They have a quarterback. And by God, isn't it the most ironic thing that Mark Stoops went 13 years without a quarterback? He did all right with Will Levis and Stephen Johnson. Terry Wilson was good enough. But he gets the best quarterback he's ever had, and he ain't going to be able to coach him much longer.
There was two games this weekend, Nick, where like the home fans were just non-existent in the fourth quarter. And because A&M LSU, which we'll hit on, was such a big deal, no one's talking about Kentucky outside of that state. But I mean, that's bad. That's when not literally, but heads got to roll, right? Because you can't have a rival coming into your home field and taking it over.
Yeah, and that's the second straight time they've done that. Louisville did it a year ago too, to end the season, where Kentucky didn't even play the fourth quarter hype video because it was just Louisville fans there. That's how bad it was. And that's a part too where Mark Stoops keeps saying things like, well, we're getting better. And it's just like, with that you're losing. Like, that's not better. This is not better. Tennessee's just a tough matchup for us. Dude, you've played Josh Heupel five times. Like, but so you just can't cover? That's a problem. That's a major, 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 major problem. And here's the other part too, Mike. Y'all didn't even play that well. I mean, you know, like you gave up 35 touchdowns on defense. Defense is no good, right? I mean, if Kentucky and Arkansas didn't exist, Tennessee would have the worst defense in the SEC. And then typically, the way that Tennessee moves the ball is they run it well, and they did not run it well. They had 108 rushing yards. You would have thought that they would have had 208, 250, if you're going to put it up like that. No, it was just every time they touched the ball, they just said, hey, go along there, and they just sling it deep and go score another touchdown. So the worst part, too, Mike, is going into halftime. Like Kentucky has this long drive. They cut it to a seven-point game, and you think, oh man, they get the ball first out of half. Like maybe they could do something here. 90 seconds, one timeout. Tennessee doesn't even need the timeout before they score a touchdown before half. Kentucky goes three and out, and then Tennessee scores on the second play, a 64-yard touchdown. Which credit to It pains me. Credit to Josh Heupel, though. I mean, because Brazel, he didn't do anything last year. He's awesome this year. Mike Matthews, he's developed. He's become a quality player in year two under the Vols. Quality deep threat. Some of those times, though, I mean, it's just they're just running by guys. And you're like, how are you supposed to be in the same league, playing on the same level, and they're just running by you? It was no fun. It was no fun.
Hey, do us a favor, Nick, if you don't mind. Turn down your mic just a hair. I think you're okay. Clipping a little bit. But yeah, while you do that, let me ask you this.
Scream, Mike.
So LSU gets their ass whooped in the second half. I think it was 35-7 in the second half. They cleared A&M. Shout out A&M, 49-25. They are legitimately a national championship contender. But would you have believed me, Nick? And again, I know Kentucky is not eager to dismiss Mark Stoops and pay that buyout and all that goes with that. But if we would, you know, we met at media days. If I would have told you that Brian Kelly's ass was gone before Mark Stoops, would you had ever believed that? Because quite frankly, I wouldn't have.
That is a brat take, though, right? I mean, that's something that Feinbaum would just like sit up there and cackle at you, like Michael, come on, but. I mean, and the worst part is too is I've said it every week on here. Like I've been a big believer in LSU. My dumbass believed in him again. It's like it was night. It was at Death Valley. This was time to rally. I wasn't a believer in A&M. I wasn't ready to gig them. That place. It's so hard to win at. I figured that LSU would have enough voodoo magic to make it happen. And there for a half, it looked like it was going to happen, man. When you turn it over going in, that just Tennessee fans know all too well that feeling. That felt like the game turned on its head. And then, my God, what an ass kicking in that second half. I mean, that is an unfathomable beatdown. Just almost incomprehensible how badly A&M just put it on them. I mean, they didn't even look like they were in the same league. That was impressive. And just a stunning, stunning fall from grace. And I know that right now everybody's like, well, we all saw it coming, the family, and blah, 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 blah. But, like, they had talent. That team has talent. And going into this year, the worst part, too, is that I believe that it was going to be for the year for Brian Kelly, and the Clemson game served as bad confirmation bias. It's like, oh, I knew it all along. Here they come. And all it did was just soil my brain.
Parker says, looks like you're going to open for the Lumineers with that hat.
There we go. We can go up there and share some takes on the stage.
But yeah, no, I mean,
I did karaoke at a tailgate before the Kentucky game, to tell you all. So there was one highlight of the day. I had at least one.
That was the only highlight, I think, for Kentucky up there. So, yeah, and it's funny you say that because you can check the tape. Anybody interested? Last fall, I was on Feinbaum, and I said, you know, Brian Kelly, they ought to fire his ass. This was after they lost to A&M and Bama. Mm-hmm. They beat Oklahoma to save it, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, he did not take kindly to that.
I think the biggest lesson learned in all of this is that you don't have to win every single big game, but you have to win some of them. And Kelly was 5-11 versus top 25 teams. We all know about the James Franklin effect, but like they kept losing those season opening games. They had things teed up, Death Valley at night. They lose those. I think it's something that's probably going to weigh heavily on your mind, Mike, particularly at the back end of the schedule. You look at Heupel did what others couldn't do. He got those Bama wins early on, and that bought him a lot of time. Like, you have to win some of those big games, and Kelly didn't win enough of them, if any at all. I guess he beat Bama once.
First year, he beat Bama.
Yeah.
That was a big one.
So that bought him a little bit of leeway. But, like, you can't come up short in all of these big moments time and time again. And the other part, too, for me is It feels like offense is always the thing that's missing for them. He was brought here to fix it. He has Jaden Daniels. He wins a Heisman with it, and then it just kind of. And part of it's because Dimbrock leaves, right? And the guy he hired to replace him hasn't been good. Hasn't been good at all. So,
and Dimbrock went back to where he came from. So, not that anybody this needs to be said, but you just you watch an LSU game. It's Brian Kelly berating his assistants for half the game. What does that say about working for old Brian Kelly? And it's been kind of hilarious to not the kid dying from Notre Dame, but literally everybody else that is like. Yeah. Since Brian Kelly's been fired, they're like, well, listen to this story of him being an asshole. What about this story of him? Like, everybody's coming out of the woodworks, and people like, I'm a big fan of Josh Pate, right? But people are like, you tried to tell us he was a good guy, you know, when he hired his ass. So it's just like literally everybody's jumping on old Brian Kelly now.
Well, my favorite of them all is... I don't remember if it was McVay or Shanahan, but there was a 2019 story on ESPN where they were coaching together at Central Michigan for Brian Kelly, and they showed up to this Christmas party, and they thought that they were going to the Christmas party, and he's like, no, you all are shoveling snow in the driveway and parking cars. Right. That, I mean, that should tell you everything you need to know about Brian Kelly. But here's the thing. None of it matters if you win. And right. I think the lesson learned in all of this is that how you treat people matters more in the state of Louisiana than it matters in most places.
I mean, right. So Urban Meyer's coming back, you're saying. Which that's a legitimate rumor out there. I have no clue.
It's a terrible rumor. Terrible
that Urban idea. May return to Florida. What would be your thoughts on that?
I mean, he is... a bigger asshole than Brian Kelly and one who hasn't won anything recently. I mean, the last time we saw him, he had his finger up a girl's butt in Ohio after his team got their teeth kicked in on Thursday Night Football. I mean,
that sounds like a Florida coach to me.
Okay, exactly. You can get away with that at Florida. Florida's like the one place in the SEC where you can get away with it. I don't know if you can get away with that in many other places, just culturally, right? Like, all of these guys are jerks to a degree, right? But you do have to treat people with a certain amount of respect. And yeah, Kelly's indifference and inability to connect to a place that just craps out talent. It's unreal. I thought though, Mike, that it might be a thing where, and I mentioned it last week where he kind of looks for another job and they kind of tell him to go find one at the end of the year. But that fourth quarter was so embarrassing that, I mean, they even got the governor involved. Enough's enough. You know, that's Louisiana, man. That's why I love that state. Love New Orleans. Ah, great place. Great people. Well, great school.
Speaking of Florida, I mean, imagine Urban Meyer and Todd Golden as your 1-2 combo down there in Gainesville. Does this hurt Florida that LSU's fired Brian Kelly? Because obviously Florida, I don't think they're getting Lane Kiffin, but that seems to be their only target that the fans are eager to land. Would LSU go after Lane Kiffin, you think?
Yeah, I mean, if nothing. So, one, yes, it does hurt Florida. Because as much as you want to be Spurrier, LSU has won national championships with his last three head coaches, three out of his last four. Florida has fired its last four, and they've not won a conference, not won a title, not won nothing. So LSU is clearly a better job. There's no in-state recruiting competition like there is at Florida. I just find it interesting that LSU always finds itself in these bidding wars. And the last go-around, it was Tom Herman in Texas and LSU. And you know what? They walked out, right? They ended up falling back into Coach O. Coach O assembles one of the most talented rosters, most talented teams in the history of college football. Herman flames out after a few years in that pressure cooker at Texas.
Well, hey, you're actually not 100% correct there, Nick, because you are correct in everything you said, but the next one they got into was, remember, Lincoln Riley. That's who they thought they were getting.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
They were going to give him whatever he wanted, seemingly. And that was a big I'm not going to LSU. And then the next day he's Southern Cal's coach. So, I mean, so you're right. Yeah. Though. Every time it opens, they're getting these damn, these giant bidding wars.
And the thing is, with all of the giant bidding wars is, if you don't get Lane Kiffin, there's not an obvious one. I mean, Drink, but is Drink, how inspiring is he to the masses there? That feels like another sort of, I think Drink would work at Florida before it would work at LSU, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Just something about Drink. He seems a little goofy, right? But I guess LSU likes their goofy. They like Coach O. That's one goofy SOB. So, and the other part too, it just, they want an offensive guy, right? Both of those guys would check those boxes. You know what? Here's one thing too. There's another coach out there who wants to get back into coaching. He's had a lot of success in the Southeastern Conference at a place that normally doesn't have a lot of success. Why not bring James Franklin to the Bayou in Baton Rouge? I mean, that personality would fit in just as well as Brian Kelly.
Yeah, absolutely. And then he'll fall flat on his face at every top 10 matchup. But he's going to have five of them a year, and we'll be doing this again in two or three years. But
one thing about this job that I don't get, though, real quick, is that, like, everybody in the SEC wants John Summerall, but LSU's just like, we will never hire somebody who coached in Louisiana. Right. In one of the G5 schools. Like, I find that to be odd, that there's just that inferiority complex. Like, we cannot hire Tulane's coach. Tulane's coach? Get out of here.
Well, so hey, weird. I'm so happy you said that, Nick, because I'm trying to get this out there to the masses, and no one's biting so far, but mm-hmm. we are in a new era. I mean, it's like clear as day. Everybody recognizes it. NIL, transfer portal. How many of these $100 million contracts for these coaches are working? I'm not seeing many that are paying off. Why are we not? Can we just not get our heads around the fact that because it is LSU, because it is Florida, I get it. These are like elite jobs that, you know, so we got to get the big name. Can we not go out there and just hire a really, really good ball coach, save money? And again, I'm it's not about being cheap. It's just about, let's not hand someone $100 million guaranteed. Let's focus most of our money on NIL. Cool. Let's focus most of our money on surrounding him with two elite coordinators. John Summerall, a Willie Fritz. I mean, again, just LSU and Florida fans, are they going to be excited about Willie Fritz? No. But if you look at his damn resume, all the guy, he's Kurt Cignetti is who he is. Why can't we go that route instead of just giving everybody $100 million?
The power dynamics are stupid in college football. That's why. Because essentially, the schools have lost all the leverage to Jimmy Sexton and the power agents in this sport. Because, frankly, there needs to be a bubble that bursts on these coaches' salaries. And it's actually less about the coaches' salaries and just more about the terms that they operate under. I know there's a lot of pressure and you can get fired at a minute's notice, but just don't make them guaranteed. The NFL doesn't have guaranteed contracts, right? Like, make this, if you get fired because you stink, well, why should you be guaranteed the money on the back end of the deal? Right? Like, maybe sniff a small percentage of, like, severance, but, like, in what world do you get guaranteed deals like this? Like, that part, the fact that norm exists, when revenue sharing is happening, I remember, the guy from Nebraska that's A&M's AD now, Trev Alberts, he essentially put in Elko's new deal that this can be renegotiated. When they hired Elko, like, we have the right to negotiate this salary down based on basically if revenue sharing happens. It needs to happen, man. I mean, it needs to happen. Like, the coaches make all the difference in the world, but now the other people are making money too. So you can't just give them everything that they want, everything that they need. But man, it's going to happen. It's going to get crazy because there's a lot of jobs opening. And then you got the toilet bowl this weekend between Hugh Freeze and Mark Stoops. I mean, That's a true loser leaves town sort of game. I don't know if Stoops would get fired after this Auburn one, because it is on the road. Kentucky's won there once since 1961. But, like, if he loses to an interim coach, he's definitely – I mean, I don't know how you can keep that losing and losing and losing and then just say, yeah, we're not going to fire you midseason. But Freeze's ass is definitely grass if he can't beat Kentucky this weekend. So, you've already got two SEC job openings, both schools that have won national titles in the 21st century. You could have a third with Auburn, and this pool of candidates isn't getting any bigger. So I'm fascinated by how crazy it's going to get. And the other part of this, too, is that what makes this year different is that the portal isn't opening right away. So there's a rush to fire these guys, but there really won't be the same amount of rush. Like, if you strike out on your first guy, if you're LSU or you're Florida, you lose the Lane Kiffin war, you probably have some time to find a new guy. But the fascinating part of it, too, is what if Ole Miss wins a playoff game, you know? And then, oh, wait, he's going to be playing on New Year's Day. The portal opens New Year's, too. So, like, then it gets – that's what's going to make this thing so crazy. It's going to be fun. And we're going to – the numbers on the YouTube channels are going to be off the charts, Michael. Off the charts. I can't wait.
You know what's hilarious? You said the toilet bowl. And I thought you were talking about a different game. Hopefully everybody can see this. But shout out this weekend, Nick. We got Mississippi State at Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Active losing streaks in just conference games in the Southeastern Conference. Mississippi State 16, Kentucky, shout out Stoops 10, Arkansas 6. Mississippi State's last SEC win, they beat Arkansas in 23. There was that god-awful 10-7 game that probably should have got Pittman fired. That day, Zach, shout out Zach Arnett, and Arkansas's last SEC win last year against Mississippi State. So literally somebody has to win between Arkansas and Mississippi State. So we potentially got two toilet bowl conference games.
No kidding, man. No kidding. Mississippi State, can you get out of your own damn way, please? I mean...
That was worse than even Kentucky losing to Texas.
Oh, significantly worse, because Kentucky hasn't been close all year. This is three straight games you should have won. Three straight. They are allergic to winning. And here's the thing, too, is like this is normal in a massive rebuild where it takes time to learn how to win. But and I guess it's actually three out of the last four. Like the Tennessee game was there for the taking, too. But the Florida game, inexcusable. Like, you have the game won, just run it out, kick the damn field goal. Instead, you throw it and you hit the fat guy right in the numbers. This week, there's so many different what-ifs, but not having Bothwell, I think that really hurt, where it's like, hey, get a third and one. You don't end the game, but then that's even less time for Arch Manning to go down and – was Arch hurt at that point or not?
He got hurt at the very end in overtime.
Okay, yeah. I knew he didn't throw, but I wasn't sure if it happened. Because, like...
right in front of Brandon Walker's face. Oh,
man. And they said, too, like, hey, I didn't have the faith that Arch Manning was going to do it, but it was like, we're sitting in the press box at Kroger Field, man... I wouldn't kick it to that guy. And you know what? They kicked it to that guy. All right, here. How many punt returners can you just name offhand? I mean, Ryan Niblett has won three straight games in a row for Texas. He has won them the games in three straight games. I mean, I know Devin Hester is the big one that comes to everybody's mind first. Like, that is Devin Hester-like stuff. I'm struggling to think of another one in the SEC. I mean, because Marion Brown, he's kickoff returns mostly. Mm-hmm. And, I know Derek Abney because he was awesome at Kentucky when I was a kid. But I cannot – Trendon Holiday at LSU back in the day was awesome, but he was mostly kick returns. I mean, can we name – a punt returner that's made a bigger impact than Ryan Niblett has in the SEC this year. I mean, what if Texas had three losses right now? Right? I mean, that's not they're hanging on by a thread. They should have.
They could have four losses right now.
Yeah, they could have four losses in the SEC. They could be 1-4 in the SEC and 3-4 overall.
Right. And I mean, yet they're favored against
five overall.
Number 9 Vanderbilt this week.
I mean, why are they? They're daring me to bet on Diego Pavia again. Vegas, why? And Arch, too, like they didn't, it didn't sound so good.
Like, yeah, so he hasn't practiced this week.
That doesn't sound good. I think the more startling part, too, is that they, like, Texas's defense let Mississippi State score, was it 38 or 31? Okay, right. My brain's not working right now.
For this one?
Yeah. I mean, they let Mississippi State score 38 points, their Texas defense. And then if you go back to the Kentucky game, I mean, Cutter Bowley, you know, might be the best quarterback of the Mark Stoops era. Don't get me wrong. But they got doubled up in yards. They gave up 400 yards of offense to Kentucky.
Right.
And like that.
I just rewatched that game just for painful sakes this morning.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like Texas refused to run the football. It's all Arch or nothing. It's such a weird game plan they have.
I don't understand it. I do think there is something to, like when you look ahead to this game between Vanderbilt and Tennessee, or Texas, excuse me. They are the exact opposites of one another in every single way. And the funny part is you would expect Texas to have the quarterback that is just the cock of the walk, that is, you know, Joey Cool, that's hanging out with Theo Vaughn and is doing all these interviews and just talking shit and backing it up everywhere he went. No. That's Vaney. Vaney's the cool guys, right? They're also the team that I know they aren't $20 million roster. They're opposite in that way. But they just win close games on guts and heart. And they get some breaks to go their way. But, my God, they keep finding a way. And you expect that from a team with the Longhorn on their helmet because of the talent. Vaney doesn't have the talent that you see on paper, but they just keep finding ways to win, man. Just keep finding ways to win. And they do it in the most, like, we're going to grind it out and it's going to be slow and it's going to take us forever to get there, but by God, we're going to do it. That final sequence, it's like, how much time are they going to take off the clock here before they punch in the game-winning score? Because, boy, they were milking it, man. Almost milked it too much. I know our friends at Auburn don't want to hear that the officials have been terrible, but the fact that they even called that one originally a fumble and then reviewed it, and it's like, yeah, he was down for like 10 seconds when they ripped it out. What are we?
If Vanderbilt wins and they improved to 8-1, is there any shot they don't go to the playoff?
No, because they're beating Auburn and Kentucky, and then it doesn't matter what happens against Tennessee.
That's wild, isn't it?
I mean,
how about for Texas? Now they are favored. If they beat Vanderbilt, do they make the playoff? They got at Georgia, Arkansas, and A&M at home.
No, not a chance. Now, okay. They can win. Like, all right, here's the thing. You can say that, yes, if Texas wins out, they will be in the playoff, because then they would have wins at Georgia and over A&M on their resume. That would be awesome. But who in their right damn mind would pick them to beat either one of those two teams, Georgia or A&M? Nobody.
What if you promised me that Georgia and A&M punted at least 4 times to Niblett?
Okay.
I mean, just don't punt to that guy, and you'll beat them.
Well, and there is an argument to be made that you talk about Georgia as a resilient team. Can't you say the same thing about Texas? The difference is Texas is doing this against inferior foes. Right. They're doing this against teams that they should be much better than. I know that was away from home, and that's, you know, you get your teeth kicked in time and time when you stay away from home for so long. But I trust those teams so much more. And one thing I didn't get to say about A&M earlier, dude, those receivers, oh my God. Did we have them in the best receivers in the SEC conversation? Because that there's no denying it.
Yeah, I mean, best 1-2, maybe in the country.
Dude, that catch that Concepcion had, that one-handed catch. You know, you're like watching a bunch of games, and I'm busy up in the press box. When I saw that, I was like, you know, you do the like eye rub, and it's like, wait, did he catch that with one hand? Like, no, like let's take another look at it. And you're like, holy shit, he caught that with one hand. How did he do? And he did it in just the most like, let me go run 20 more yards down the field. Then he's got a punt return, touchdown two. And the thing with Concepcion as well is that you're like, I mean, but he's not the fast one. It's Craver. No, he's also the fast one. I mean, they're awesome right now. And they're in the driver's seat. I'm fascinated by, because of the result that Ole Miss got this weekend, a lot of tiebreakers could be in play if things go the right way. And I am, if you want to make, like, I know that last year we had a lot of people get upset about the SEC teams getting left out of the playoff. And Greg saying he got so upset that they made him rewrite strength of schedule stuff into their guidelines. What happens if there's 4 1-loss SEC teams? And they've all got wins over each other. Like, having tiebreaker chaos, I want that. I need that. Because here's the other part, too. I mean, you would assume that all 4 would be guaranteed a playoff spot. But I want the chaos because then it'd be up to Sankey, like, right? Like, it's your own. You made this dumb tiebreaker situation. We're going to have to coin flip at the Quick Trip, you know, get all the coaches together.
Hey, the A&M fans are all yelling the same thing at me, Nick. A&M, their receivers are so damn good. That wasn't even Concepcion. That was Ashton Bethel Roman with the one-handed catch.
Yeah, see, that's not... The other part of it, too, that you have to give Elko a lot of credit is that getting 5 stars isn't anything new. It's getting them to play like 5 stars. That's what's new.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's another case in point, what I was saying. Did they give him a $100 million contract? No. They learned their damn lesson from Jimbo. Was he choice number one? No, that would be old Stoops over there, apparently. But again, you don't have to get this $100 million coach. Go get you a damn ball coach. Get him the talent. I mean, remember this time last year, Nick, they were saying, God, this offense. Remember how awful they looked against Texas?
Yeah.
They needed to get some weapons. They needed a quarterback.
Who
wasn't even the starter entering the year.
That's true.
He got inserted, so he had a full off season. So... it's just wild what a year can do for you, you know?
And apparently Ashton Bethel Roman's dad played at LSU. I mean, that's salt in the wound for the Tigers.
Go get John Gruden, they're saying, for cheap at Kentucky.
Yeah, retread hire is the last, last thing you want. And I think that's the case for most schools, right? Most are unwilling to give guys a second chance unless you are down the totem pole or if you've been there before. Those are really in vogue right now. Petrino's back at Arkansas as the interim. Mm-hmm. Rich Rod's back at West Virginia. You mentioned Urban back to Florida. They would be, I don't think there's ever been a more hateable coach in college football than Urban Meyer.
Yeah. I mean, Hugh Freeze gives him a run for his money, but yeah, I think that's fair.
I thought it was like a game past due to put Ashton Daniels in. I mean, they were losing and had to be like, all right, please, Ashton Daniels, go save us. And he just made easy plays. It was methodical, but they just seamlessly moved the ball down the field pretty effortlessly. And was it 17-0 in the fourth quarter for Auburn over Arkansas?
Yeah, four fourth quarter turnovers for the Razorbacks to end the game. Now, the last one, you know, kind of like last-ish effort, but still, a pick six, fumble. The Arkansas, once one thing goes wrong, they start forcing the issue because I think they have no faith in their defense.
Right.
But Auburn, I mean, Auburn, again, Hugh Freeze is such a clown. 230 rushing yards. I mean, they literally could they could not be stopped on the ground. And he's let's dial up a pass here. We're about to score. And Jackson Arnold throws a pick six. I literally thought that was going to be the play that got him fired.
Yeah.
Because Arkansas had control up until they imploded themselves.
I
mean, but
I the way that you spell it out, it's almost like Hugh, instead of throwing his quarterback under the bus with his words, he did it with his plays. Where, because that's one thing, Arnold has been very Peyton Thorne-like without the turnovers.
Right.
So Hugh was like, I need an excuse to bench him. Well, all right, we'll make him throw it in the red zone. Then I can say, well, it's got to be Ashton Daniels now.
And keep in mind, he was the one that selected and brought in Jackson Arnold too. You know what I mean? It's not like he inherited him.
And the other part too, he brought in Ashton Daniels as his backup if Arnold sucked. Arnold has been the same. He's been the same as he always ever was. What took you so long? Like, it really took losing and getting your ass kicked by a terrible Arkansas team to make a switch? Hugh, I love that he said something about play calling when it comes to their red zone struggles. It's like, you've already got three play callers. I mean, is there enough room for a fourth? Can we get a red zone play caller in there to fix it?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, how Hugh Freeze can fix it. He can't fix his coaching. That's beyond shot. I don't think he can save his job because I think he should have been fired about a year ago. But he can fix his wardrobe over there, Nick, with ponchooutdoors.com/SEC. You got to write it out just like that. It's in the show notes. ponchooutdoors/SEC to get $10 off, Nick, over at Poncho Outdoors. And this is fine gear from Poncho they sent to me. This is called the Neyland, Tennessee inspired. Here, I wore it just for you, Nick. Yeah. I got a great deal over at ponchooutdoors.com/SEC by getting $10 off with that promo code. The Poncho Promise, Nick. Free shipping, free returns, free exchanges to make sure everything fits you right. Poncho stands by every shirt. And I love it because this is a SEC-based business out of Austin. This is a small business. We love partnering with small businesses in the SEC footprint. So go check them out, ponchooutdoors.com/SEC to get you 10% off. Get you a Neyland shirt. I might send you one, Nick, for that next Tennessee game so you can blend in with the rest of that Kentucky crowd that's left in the fourth quarter. You know what?
Don't remind me. Those are great-looking shirts, though. That's our company from Austin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be in Austin this weekend. Ooh. That's why I got my hippy dippy hat on. Yeah. Going to Austin and see some sights.
I wanted to compliment you. Hopefully you got it at Poncho Outdoors, but maybe you didn't. It's fine if you didn't. But I really like that jacket you had on your Kentucky reaction after Tennessee beat them again. But that looked like a nice setup there. You are improving your game here.
Yeah, well, and I'll prove it even more in Poncho Outdoors. The post-game rants are just, you know, I've got to do one after so many losses. There's only so many things you can keep saying about so many losses. But, hey.
You know where I think they probably had just an equal meltdown? Is in Columbia. Oh, man. What a game. They at South Carolina absolutely dominated Alabama for most of that game. It was a bad omen, Nick, that Bama's first touchdown came on a Carolina pick six, which hit the running back right in the damn hands, and then he just bobbled it and shot it up in the air, and Bama returned it. They literally could do nothing right for the first quarter, the third quarter, Alabama, that is. Meanwhile, Carolina, you know, kept getting stopped for field goal attempts, which, hey, points are points. You'll take them, especially this year, given your track record. But right. You had this one. You were up a touch. You were up eight late in the fourth. You just let it slip right through your fingers. You even got the ball back with the game tied 22 all, and you had an opportunity. And this is what I tweeted, Nick. I said, well, this is a Mike Shula legacy drive, right? And then, God. And then nothing, fumble, Bama recovers, scores a touchdown, ball game. Just a devastating result here.
The stars aligned. I mean, this is how Shane Beamer gets these upsets. You get the non-offensive touchdown early on, you build up a lead, you play keep away, and then you keep the ball in your star quarterback's hands. The lack of settling for field goals with Lenora Sellers as your quarterback, you can't find ways for him to make plays, is just ridiculous. That's because Mike Shula sucks as a play caller. The other part of it too, because let's be real. South Carolina, they get a couple shots at teams every year, but they stink. They're not good, especially this team. They're wasting Lenora Sellers, Dylan Stewart, all of them. You had your chance at your upset. You're not beating Ole Miss. You're not beating A&M. But, hey, at least Clemson sucks. So, you know what? Five wins. Good job. It'll be fun. Be a fun year. Here's the part that there's two things. I think a big concern for Alabama and a big plus. Should I give him the bad news first?
Yeah.
I know Sellers was the one that fumbled the game away. I know. But I'm talking early on when they're kicking field goals in the second and third quarter and the defense is actually holding strong against Alabama. And that's where I think the most jarring part is. I thought Alabama figured out how to run the football. What was that? South Carolina's run defense is garbaggio. No bueno. Muy malo. Very, very bad. Maybe the worst in the SEC. I don't know. It changes so often with some of these teams at the bottom of the barrel. Arkansas, they can't stop a nosebleed. But South Carolina, like, that is one thing that every team should be able to do against South Carolina is run the football. Jim Miller, 10 attempts for 26 yards. Only 23 attempts overall. And I don't know how many of those were sacks. It looks like two. So, like, they only tried to run it 20 times. You got to commit to it a little bit more just to keep them honest. That's concerning. But here's the other part that's, I think, you have to be telling yourself if you're a Bama fan. A, you just got out of there with a win, right? Like, and that can be tricky at that place. They all know. They remember it very fondly when they had McElroy there. Was it 2012, 2010, something like that? And Stephen Garcia.
2010, I believe.
Yeah. Everybody remembers that upset, that jarring upset. So they got out of there with the win. But I think most importantly, Ryan Grubb got in his bag late in that game, man. Because it was – were they down seven?
They were down eight.
Yeah, yeah.
They had to go for two. A hell of a two-point.
Dude, that two-point play was awesome. And then the last touchdown play was awesome. I'm not going to try to explain it all, but, like, the way they got your eyes, because, like, okay, let's be real. All these smarty pants play callers, it's a lot of the same concepts. It's just how you dress it up.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Everybody could see the Philly special happening on – I think it was the last play that was like the fake Philly special, and then he just kept it and ran. And it was like, oh, that guy's got the ball. Like, what? Huh? Like, Ryan Grubb is awesome, and he's got a quarterback that can execute what he wants, and that's going to get them out of some jams. So, you know, tip of the cap. Well done, Alabama. You got out of there with the win. You got yourself one heck of a play caller, one heck of a quarterback, and – why aren't people wanting to hire Ryan Grubb as a head coach? Why isn't he on any of these lists?
That's a good point.
Just saying. They might want to be saying that down the road.
Looking good. We know who they are trying to hire. We talked kind of about it, but we haven't talked about the game. Ole Miss goes on the road and beats Oklahoma. Just a hell of a job. And I don't know if you saw this afterwards. It's going pretty viral. But Lane Kiffin, apparently Brent Venables said, well, you know, I think we're a better team. And Lane Kiffin, direct quote here. That's interesting. That's a hot take. Maybe they were a better team last year, too. Maybe he had the better team at Oklahoma when we beat him 55-19 in the national championship. Maybe he had the better team at Clemson when we beat him 45-40 in the national championship at Alabama. So shout out Lane Kiffin for trolling, unlike anyone can do. But that was a tough one for the Sooners, and another big win that doesn't lock up a playoff spot for Ole Miss, but comes pretty damn close to it.
Yeah, yeah, especially with you. Yeah, you look at that rest. Yo, you got to beat Florida and South Carolina at home and then win the Egg Bowl. I know things get weird in the Egg Bowl, but
I think they could even lose one of those and possibly still make the playoff at 10-2.
I wouldn't chance it. Wouldn't chance it because there's going to be chaos at the top of the league. And, I mean, if Georgia on the road is your only blemish, then hell yeah, freaking right. As good as Lane has been, what the hell was he doing going for it up 12 at his own 20-yard line? Like that. I mean, you got to give credit to Ole Miss for – you know, things start getting tight a little bit later on because Oklahoma scores and then there's a turnover and all of a sudden you look up and you're like, what the hell is going on? But that – so, like, on the one hand, I'm saying Ole Miss, great job. You won a game that you normally lose, right? You're going on the road. You're – like that. That felt like a game that they typically lose where they've got all the momentum. Was it 2 years ago that they started like 8-0 and they really collapsed down the stretch?
Mm-hmm.
It started with games like this. So you want to give them credit for getting the win and then kind of doing it comfortably. But on the other hand, you had that sequence, that going forward on fourth down where I'm just like, why give them a chance when Oklahoma hadn't moved the ball all day against your defense? Which shout out to Pete Golding because that defense has been much, much, much better than expected. Considering all the talent they lost. Mm-hmm. But the other part of it too, what the hell were they doing putting Austin Simmons in the red zone? What was that? Like,
apparently the rationale was Chambliss, he's having a lot of tipped passes. But again, he's playing the best game he's played. He's got you all the way down there. Let's insert a quarterback that hasn't played in 2 months. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Andy's the better running threat. Which that's why the only time it makes sense when they do the red zone quarterback stuff, it was Nick Fitzgerald at Mississippi State. It was Tebow at Florida. You put in a big son bitch to go down there and run it in, right? Or, you know, you're doing your wildcat sort of stuff. Taking out your running guy to put in your cold freshman, that didn't make sense at all. Didn't make sense at all. However, that one fourth down they went for it. That dude was wide open, right? Mm-hmm. Or was that? I mean, he was just – if you hit him, I mean, that's a touchdown. So,
and that was the game because they were losing. That was fourth quarter they were losing. They scored on that drive. It was the game-winning points essentially.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad Ole Miss won that game because Oklahoma kind of is what they are. They're a fine team, but they're not – and that defense is good. It was exciting early on in the year. And I know that.
You think they're going to collapse down the stretch here with at Tennessee, at Bama, Missouri at home, LSU at home?
Yeah, yeah, I kind of do.
Is Venables back? Let's say
they're 7-5.
Mm-hmm.
If you bring back Mateer, if you have Mateer guaranteed to come back,
yeah.
I think. You say yes because if quarterback you have that synergy, right? Mm-hmm. Of like, well, quarterback, offensive coordinator, you know, we didn't have the run game, we try to fix that. You know, the schedule, you look at the strength of schedule, it was one of the toughest in the country. For me, this upcoming game against Tennessee is huge. I mean, look what Kentucky did against the Tennessee defense.
Right.
John Mathias should be able to put up points in this game. Right? Like, he should be able to put up points. But you're going on the road. Heupel hates your ass. And it's dark mode, which I've been to one of those games, man. It's not good for the road team. That place is going to be a hornet's nest.
Is that the best game of the weekend, or do you think it's Vanderbilt, Texas? Or is there possibly another one?
I think it's Oklahoma, Tennessee, because they're so – I view them very similarly, mm-hmm. where they are fine but flawed.
Right.
You know, like Oklahoma can't run the ball at all. So Mateer has to do everything, and that puts you in a bind. It's just not as bad a bind as Arkansas – because they've got Oklahoma as an awesome defense. Tennessee, great offense, but my God, that secondary is just terrible. They got true freshmen running past them, you know? Like, and I'm glad that the true freshmen that Kentucky, I don't know if they had a passing touchdown of more than 30 yards all year, and they had two in the first half. That's when the game was still in the balance. And they've got that freshman, DJ Miller. He's good. He was a big-time recruit. Lane Kiffin wanted him. That was his second game ever, and he's just running past Tennessee's corners. So, like, this, if Mateer can get back to September Mateer, and granted, that was where he was doing things at home, they have a chance to win that football game. But, like, it's going to have to be – I kind of think it's going to have to be in a shootout to a degree. Like, Oklahoma's only winning if they – like it feels like a race to 35. Feels like a race to 35.
Mm-hmm.
Or a race to create turnovers, right? Like, you know, like is because that is, you know.
Which Oklahoma has not done this year. I think they have created 4 turnovers, which is like among the lowest in the country.
And one of them was that safety that, you know, at the end of that, they got the cover against, who was that early on? Auburn,
yeah.
Which, is that their best win? No, it's Michigan. But still, like, that's kind of what you look back and feels like there was a lot of fool's gold sort of early on.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. That if Mateer gets going, that should be a very fun game at Neyland Stadium. Whereas, like, Texas and Vandy, it is kind of funny. You've got the two big city schools in the SEC together, and you got, like, who would have thought that Diego Pavia would be a bigger star than Arch Manning going in this game?
Hey, I was on Peter Burns' Sirius radio show this morning. He asked me a really good question. I'm going to ask it to you.
Okay.
Which team with an interim coach is more likely to win? Florida this weekend against Georgia with their interim Billy Gonzalez, or LSU with interim Frank Wilson against Alabama next week? Which is more, not that you're predicting either one to win, but which one is more likely, do you think?
Man, I would think that it would be Florida. Where's the Alabama LSU game?
At Alabama.
Yeah, it's Florida. Mm-hmm. Because you can just see, I mean, Lagway had him in that game a year ago until his leg blew up or whatever it was. They thought he was going to die. They were carting him off in a wheelchair, and then he played the next week. But he had him in that game. And yeah,
they were winning, I believe, when he got hurt.
And I think that, yeah. Yeah, I got to lean there because Bama will be out for blood. They're coming back home. They haven't been home in a long time. Yeah, it's got to be that one. And although there is a part of me that wonders, like, how much did LSU, like, did their players, how much of do they hate Brian Kelly? And so they're just glad to be away from him.
See, that's what I said. And Frank Wilson is beloved down there. And minus the COVID year, which that was a weird year, obviously, I can't imagine LSU ever doesn't get up for Bama. Now, getting up for a game and being near as good as their opponent, that's two different things. But I think LSU will give Alabama all they want. And don't forget, Kalen DeBoer, for whatever reason, he can't coach against an unranked opponent. And LSU's going to be unranked. They only get up for the ranked games, apparently.
But it's still big game. My bigger thing is more of just the play calling advantage that Bama should so clearly have. Like, how is LSU going to combat that?
And LSU, you know, they can't defend a running quarterback. Ty Simpson can run, but that's not his strong suit. So in that respect, that kind of may not cripple LSU either.
Here's a question for you. What is the most heartbreaking way that Mississippi State can lose to Arkansas? Because I think we need to say it out loud so that our friends in Hog Heaven can at least brace themselves for it. Because at this rate, it's going to happen again, right? Like, could they be up by 24 points in the fourth quarter when Taylen Green gets hot? instead of a punt return, maybe it's like all they have to do is just not fumble it and they snap it over the guy's head and Arkansas like scoops and scores. I mean, because that's where we're at with Mississippi State right now. I mean, they are just finding creative ways to get their hearts ripped out on a weekly basis.
How about this? What if they jump out there unstoppable? They don't get stopped in the first half. It's like 35-7.
Mm-hmm.
And then Arkansas, which has the most pitiful defense, arguably, in all of college football, not just SEC, literally all of football. They're so bad. They just shut them out in the second half and they're forcing turnovers and they just whip the hell out of Mississippi State. That'd be pretty painful.
I know heartbreaking losses pretty well. I wasn't like aware enough, but it did happen in my lifetime. Chris Doering caught the game-winning touchdown pass against Kentucky in a game in which Florida threw six interceptions. Florida threw six interceptions and won. That could be Arkansas, Mississippi State. We could have a Blake Shapen whatever. You get what I'm saying. I'm getting.
Was that the most painful?
Yeah, but yes. Taylen Green throws six picks and they still win.
Hey, well, speaking of who hasn't thrown any interceptions on this, I want to give him a shout out because his Aggies undefeated, whooping everybody's ass. SEC Sean gifted 5 memberships to the channel. He gifted to Prometheus Shrugged. What a name. Brett Springer, Michael, not me, but probably a cooler Michael. Kyle Spruwell and Gift Card. I wish that was my name. You've all been gifted by SEC Sean. Welcome to the family. Yeah. All right, Nick, but anything else before we wrap this one up?
I don't know if I'm ready for Texas A&M to win the SEC. I'm not.
Indiana Roush?
We've had, I know, more than a decade to prepare for it, but I like them being, like, good but not great. I'm not mentally prepared for this yet, you know?
Right.
I've kind of felt sorry for them. If they get good.
Haven't they suffered enough, though, to where they deserve a great year like this?
Yeah, but just, like, how insufferable can they be? I guess at the expense of Texas fans, like, it'll make them miserable. So, like, fine by me. The part that'll hurt is just thinking, like, man, they could have had Stoops, you know? Like,
What would be their record today if Stoops was the coach?
Oh, 13-0. They would have won more games. You just knock down, drag them out. Youngstown tough. You've been incredible.
See, you can get that outstanding content if you go follow Nick and go check his stuff out at Kentucky Sports Radio. Give him your handle before you go, Nick.
Yeah, I'm at Roush KSR on the X. Gonna give it to you.
Yeah, you might want to get locked in. They're going to have a coaching search. That's going to be a lot of fun. So go check them out. Appreciate you, Nick. Appreciate each and every one of you. Hey, we're going to go a little bit later. I think he's on the golf course again. So it's going to be 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 Central tonight. Be there or be square. Thank you, Nick. And we'll catch you on the next Roush Hour.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.